You know, we had a good cold open there until you said, but if you just bleep that, I think there's something nice in there.
No, we can't talk about on the show.
Well, you don't have to say, well, that's what I mean. You bleep the and I'm telling you, go back. It's good what you've got there until I.
No,
it's good.
I don't know.
It might be your best.
If that's my best, I'm in the wrong business.
No, you're in the right business.
Hello and welcome to episode 325 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam Van BC.
I'm taking a drink, so vamp a little bit.
Okay. That's short for done. Vancouver. Short for Vancouver.
Yeah. Done.
Just in case I confused anybody out there.
Did I ever tell you about the time? I might have told you this, maybe not. You remember a TV show called 21 Jump Street?
Yes. I never watched it, but I did see both of the movies.
Really? I was a fan of the show when I was a kid. And so they filmed that in Vancouver, famously, or not famously, depending on whether you know it or not. And so I remember on family vacation one year, we were down in Los Angeles at Disneyland.
Okay.
And I come waiting in the line of the jungle ride or something like that. And who's standing next to me but the police, the boss on the show.
Sure.
Yeah.
That guy.
Captain Fuller was his name on the show.
Okay.
And he went on to be in X-Files and stuff like that. He was one of the, I don't know, Mr. X or something. Anyways, so I recognized him and I said, oh, hey. You're from the 21 Jump Street show. Yeah. I said, oh, hey, yeah, I'm from Vancouver. And I was probably like 14 at the time, I guess. And so he's like, oh, hey, that's cool. You know, hey, you're down here on vacation. Hey, that's great. All right. Well, we're gonna take off. See you in the van.
Nice.
And I was like, wow, I've never heard the van before.
Till today.
Yeah. And I was like, I went back to school and tried that out. I was like, hey, guys, yeah, I'm headed into the van. Took a beating that day. Nobody calls it that.
Yeah. I've never heard it either. I thought I invented it.
No. That was Steven. His name's Steven, I think.
Okay.
Something. Anyways, I think maybe it's like Frisco. Nobody from San Francisco actually says Frisco.
Although it sounds cool.
Does it?
Well, yeah. now that I'm hearing it in my head, no. It doesn't.
Certainly doesn't. Okay. You know what does sound cool, though?
Amazon?
If you're going to buy the box set of 21 Jump Street,
yeah,
you get it, which I'm going to recommend you probably don't.
Okay.
Don't bother. Sorry, guys, but it's a long story. Do get it on Amazon, though.
Yeah.
Click through our site, help us out.
Or the movie's good, or at least the first one's good.
Was the second one not good?
I don't remember the second one, so it's not super memorable to me, but the first one was good, and I remember it.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. What's going on, Adam?
Just got back. Spring break still. End of spring break. Just got back from Seattle and our road trip, our spring break road trip.
We were talking like last 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, or was it then, about Seattle and singles.
Sure.
I don't think I knew you were going to Seattle.
Yeah, and I might have forgotten.
Evidently.
Yeah. So we went.
Did you go to the apartment building that they all live in the movie?
No.
Oh.
No. Went to the gum wall, though.
Did you go to the gum wall?
Yeah, first time I'd ever been to the gum wall.
Big day, huh?
Yeah. We did all the scenic things, like all the touristy things. They have, some cities do this, but Seattle has one of these city passes where you basically, you know, you buy sort of a pass to all the big attractions, sort of one price that's much cheaper than if you did them individually.
Sure.
So we did that and went to the Space Needle and the Museum of
Pop.
The Seattle Space Needle.
The what?
Space Noodle.
There you go.
Okay.
And they knew it.
That and the Museum of Pop Culture, which is really cool, mostly music-related stuff that's super cool.
I did not know that place existed, and one of our other friends just posted a bunch of pictures on Facebook. They were down there a couple days ago.
Okay.
Probably missed you by a day. Not that it mattered. You probably still enjoyed yourself.
Sure, yeah.
But I did not even know that there was a Museum of Pop Culture.
It used to be called the Seattle Music Project. They changed the name.
Still didn't even know about that.
That's okay. We went about 10 years ago, and I wasn't even sure that it was the same place up until like I started looking at pictures of the outside, and I said, oh, yeah, they changed the name of that. So I guess.
And how was that place?
It's really cool. Yeah, lots of cool music-related stuff. Some other stuff as well, like the science fiction, and they have all different kinds of exhibits. It's interactive. The kids liked it. Lots of stuff for them to try out as far as music goes. Mm-hmm. And then just lots of neat historical items and sort of, I don't know, I don't even know what you call it, some sort of artistic creations, I guess is what you call them, of music-related items. It's very cool, yeah.
I have an obsession, probably, a large appreciation, a great appreciation of pop culture.
Okay, you would like it.
For good or for bad. Not all of it was good.
Mm-hmm.
Acid wash jeans, bad.
Mm-hmm.
Very bad. Feathered hair, obviously good.
Yeah.
Sorry, not for you. But I just love in fact I think I honestly don't remember if Don and I talk about nostalgia in the interview coming up, because we recorded it a couple days ago.
That's a teaser.
That's a teaser for the Don interview. But we definitely talked about nostalgia, either on or off the air. I forget now. But I have this and not even for the nostalgia part. That's not even the part that I love the best about the pop culture and all that. Because obviously a museum of pop culture, it doesn't have a lot of current stuff in it, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you're right. There are some current stuff it goes through, I don't know, a lot of it is 80s and 90s, I think.
Is there a grunge wing?
There's a whole Nirvana section. Lots of Nirvana stuff, lots of broken guitars, and I mean, it's Seattle, right? So
yeah. But Pearl Jam too.
Yeah. But there's a lot of Nirvana stuff, and there's a lot of, just guitar stuff. There's a whole guitar section, and I didn't go through all the grunge stuff. I mean, we were more into the interactive stuff. Mm-hmm. So I did some of you could have spent hours and hours and hours and hours in there, because all the little exhibits, they have little headsets and you can listen to, and little videos with little things that you can sort of not just look at but hear and see interviews and blah blah blah. I didn't do much of that. Mostly, we spent about 2 hours. We walked around. We got the gist of it. We spent more time up at the soundstage area where you can try drums and guitars and synthesizers and all this stuff. So that's kind of what they were into.
But photographically, you got some good shots.
I took some shots, but I mean, it seems like if you go on social media, everyone's taken, there's a huge kind of three-story, maybe four-story high
guitar
thing. Yeah, and I thought, I took a few pictures of it, but so does everybody else there from every angle. So, I mean, yeah, it's not nothing.
The Terminator.
Yeah, there's the Terminator in the sci-fi exhibit part, and I snapped a shot of that. But yeah, a lot of it is just over-photographed. So it was more about I took a few pictures of my kids interacting with stuff. So that was kind of more my take on it.
And the camera choice?
For the whole trip, it was the 5D Classic with a 50mm lens, because, again, wanted to pack light. Didn't take the little point-and-shoot this time. Decided that I wanted, really to be able to do more with depth of field, and I thought the 50mm is just a good all-round, and the 5D Classic I love, and then I'm not going to be too concerned about leaving it in a hotel room or whatnot if there's no safe and all that jazz. So yeah, that was the camera choice.
Good choice. Always a good choice.
And I haven't even gone through the photos, because this is one of those situations. I haven't taken, I don't know if you've gathered this from my last few podcasts, I haven't taken a lot of just sort of, casual, fun photos, week to week. You're asking about things that are interesting. And sometimes, I mean, a lot of time, I just really haven't taken photos outside of the photo challenge. And this was the direct opposite. Doing this sort of was like, I think I came back with 550 photos and we were only gone 3 days. So
you got the bends, essentially.
Yeah, I was just loving it and I was loving the results. And we've talked before about the 5D Classic, and you don't really know what you have until you get home and upload the photos. And so,
you know what I like to that point, though?
Yeah.
Is your, when you look at the screen and like before you even get home, your expectations are mild at best.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're very low. You can't even sometimes tell if it's really in focus.
Yeah. And so, what happens when you see them, you're like, wow, I am really good at this.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is that. And that camera, too. I mean, I didn't bring a flash at all. Mm-hmm. So you're also a little bit behind the eight ball as far as, you know, ISO 1600 is the absolute ceiling that you can shoot that camera at, or at least that I'm willing to shoot it at. And so
it doesn't go higher than that.
Doesn't it? I don't even know. Does it go higher than that?
I don't think it has a high setting. I think 1600. And even then, I've used that four times in my career with it, you know.
Yeah. And when I had to use it on a number of occasions just to get anything, and without a flash, but again, even that with a little bit of noise correction and Lightroom, you're getting fantastic images. And again, pair it with a 50mm 1.4, and I mean, really, I never came up against a situation that I just had to sort of say, oh, I'm going to put the camera away because I can't do this without flash. Not once. Mm-hmm. And I shot in a lot of different dark environments. So that goes to show you, again, we're talking about prime lenses in the last episode, and you know how great having a prime lens that opens up wide is. I mean, perfect example. I got away with 4 days worth of shooting in all different kinds of lighting. And the Museum of Pop Culture, some of the shots were in really low light. And I mean, mm-hmm. cranking it down to an ISO, or cranking the ISO to only 1600, which by modern camera standards is like nothing, and then opening up to like a 1.4 or 1.8, you can still get great images without a flash.
Sure.
So there's my endorsement, why to throw your flash in the garbage.
Don't do that, but definitely think twice before you travel with it, that's for sure.
Yeah, because I always do, and I hardly ever use it, and it is a bit of a nuisance for carrying it around, and it still is. I mean, the one I have, I'm using, you know, a Canon EX, whatever, 430, like a mid-level Canon branded flash, and they're still, I mean, even used, worth a couple hundred bucks that you don't want to just leave it around. So this way, again, packing light and being able to get away without it is really nice.
I have always fancied those flashes to be somewhat fragile.
The Canon ones?
All of them, just in general. Like, you know, it's one of those things where I would just feel like if someone bumps it or splashes, you know, their beer on it or something like that, like I'm thinking of like being at a wedding or something like that, it's just going to, that's it. That's the end of that thing. You know, it's not that robust when in those situations. And for me, I don't even, like, if I'm going to somebody's house, like we're going over to a kid's birthday party, let's say.
Yeah.
Well, all the kids are like the same age as my kids right now, which basically means they're just a complete hurricane.
Right.
You know, they're all around 5 to 7 to down to 3 years old. And so it's just a mess. So I can't find anywhere to put my camera and make sure it doesn't get, you know, bumped or smashed or whatever. So with the flash on it, like that comes way down. Like there's absolutely nowhere, like on top of something, but it's coming down.
Right.
So I can't do it. And you can't. I don't like to just be, oh, you know, I'll grab the flash and then I'll assemble it and then take the photo, because then the moment's gone.
Right.
So I find that I never, forget traveling, I don't even go across town with the flash.
Yeah.
For that reason.
And I hear you. Another thing I wanted to say about just the setup, like just, a full frame camera and a 50mm lens. For anybody out there that's got that combination and hasn't sort of done a little family trip or trip of any sort, where you're thinking, oh, I got to bring, you know, a long zoom and I got to bring a wide angle and you know, and all this. I mean, I think as far as photographically and sort of really challenging yourself and, you know, improving yourself as a photographer, doing it all with one lens is absolutely awesome learning experience, because you just have to problem solve. Well, how am I going to do this and how am I going to do that? We went to the what was it called? I think it's pronounced Chihuly Glass and Garden. It's right. It's a museum where they do all blown glass,
mm-hmm.
and it is amazing. It's actually on TripAdvisor's top 10 list of museums across the U.S. I think there's three in New York. There's like the Smithsonian, and this Chihuly Garden and Glass Museum is on the list. It's 5 stars, like with thousands of reviews for TripAdvisor. Never been there. It sits right at the base of the Space Needle. And so we went there because it was in this package for the City Pass and absolutely loved it. And from a photography standpoint, such a neat place to go in and photograph. And again, you go on TripAdvisor, you're going to see every picture imaginable that can be taken here of all the little, like the rooms are sort of dark, and then they just illuminate these kind of huge glass, sometimes thousands of individual pieces, making a big kind of sculpture. And oh, wow. And it's really cool to see the images. But I found myself in a situation where it's really dark. I have this camera that's not going to go very high on the ISO. Mm-hmm. And I got a 50 millimeter lens. And sometimes you're standing and this piece of artwork is huge. And I mean, normally I would just sort of say, put the camera back in the bag and walk away. Like, do I need a picture of this? But then just in terms of a you know, trying to play a challenge with myself, I shot a huge kind of from relatively close up, one of these sort of, I don't know if it's called sculptures, a big canoe filled with all these different glass balls. And then there's another canoe beside it filled with completely different kind of curved and shaped glass pieces. And again, it's a pretty large, like these are massive, like long canoes. And again, you can only stand a few feet back and there's a walkway. And I decided I'm going to shoot this super shallow depth of field. And I'm going to just do one of the composite photos where I'm just going to use manual exposure, shoot on a super shallow depth of field and just take whatever, 50, 60 photos. And then I'm going to piece them together. Yeah.
The Brennizer method.
Yeah, exactly.
That I invented.
That's right. That you invented. And I did that, and I will post the photo. Maybe I'll put it in now that we've talked about it. I'll put it in the Dropbox. And just what an amazingly cool effect in a photo that is impossible.
Did your picture work?
The picture worked great.
Oh.
And there's even reflections on the floor because it's all black, right? So there's reflections on the floor that turned out great. And I was just like, oh, this is awesome. Like this is a photo. It didn't matter what lens I packed. I couldn't have got this photo with the depth of field
from
plus, you know, not having it be crazy distorted or anything. So it is a super cool image that, again, I don't know what I'll do with. You know, maybe if we make a spring break little photo book from our trip, because I took so many photos, we'll probably do that. This will go in there just to mark one of the places we were at.
Sure.
So anyways.
I'm more sour about that because I have not once but twice for our monthly photo challenge.
Yeah.
Which is shallow depth of field. I have tried two different Brennizer method shots. And they have both, I cannot get them stitched together. Like there's something's gone wrong. There's an exposure difference or whatever. So it's just, so to hear you have success just makes me feel inadequate.
Awesome. Maybe it's my version of Lightroom is better than yours. I didn't do it in Photoshop. That was all Lightroom.
Oh, you can do that in Lightroom?
Yeah, right in Lightroom.
Oh, I have the older Lightroom, so yours is better, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was fast, too. I mean, it maybe took, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes for it to stitch it together, which I'm used to in the old version of Photoshop that I was using. Sometimes it'd take a half an hour for it to put it together.
Sure, yeah. Well, maybe it's time for me to upgrade then.
There you go. There's your reason. Like
it. Yeah, we'll do it. So more Seattle, or is that for next week?
We can pick it up for next week. I'm sure there's going to be some enlightening things Don has to tell us, so I don't want to out Don.
He's never been to Seattle.
No, he hasn't, eh?
I have no clue. Sure he has. I'm sure he's been to Seattle.
All right. Well, good. you can ask him.
I shan't. wisdom teeth out. You can talk about that.
Should I talk about it before I get them out or after?
Yeah, talk about it now. By the time you're hearing this, you have the wisdom teeth.
Yeah, right now, super wise.
Well, but when we're talking about it now, but when you're hearing this...
Oh, no more wisdom teeth. I hope, lest my specialist cancels on me or something. Yeah, tomorrow.
Or even worse, he can't get them out.
Oh, no. He just wakes me up. He's like, sorry, man, those aren't coming out. They're half out. Yeah, they're just dangling, but I can't get them out.
Yeah. That's the worst. Yeah, I got them part way, and then I kind of, something else came up. I got a thing.
Here's a bunch of rocks. Chew on these. They might fall out.
Yeah, here's some candy. I get some toffee that my grandma gave me.
Yeah,
that'll get him out. Yeah, I've had the wisdom teeth out. I'll you're probably going to be fine. You got a pretty good constitution, as far as I can tell.
All right.
I was one of the lucky ones. It did not faze me at all. Got him out on I think it was a Wednesday afternoon. Thursday morning, flew to Saskatoon, partied for the weekend.
Nice.
No problems.
Well, I hope is my experience. Not partying, the Saskatoon
part. Partying in Saskatoon?
Yeah.
I think you could do better. No, that's not true. If you're in Saskatoon listening, I love Saskatoon.
Okay.
It's a good time. Paris of the Prairie, I think they call it. maybe that's Moose Jaw or Brandon. I don't remember.
All right.
We should have an episode where we just talk about the most Canadian sounding cities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saskatoon would be on there as along with Moose Jaw.
Cold Lake.
Oh yeah.
Cold Lake is probably one of them. Yeah. Took my son to his first T-ball practice ever.
Okay, they have T-ball in Germany.
Well, yeah, part of my team, right? Like, we have a whole organization. It's not just like my team isn't just one team. It's like nine different teams all under one club.
Okay.
And so there's one of the things is a T-ball program. I don't know if it's a team. I think it's a team. They call it a team.
Okay.
And so it's still pretty cold out, so we're still in the gym the last couple days. The last couple practices are in the gym. So he expressed interest. He wanted to go finally. And I said, that's great. Let's get out there. And so I took him, and he had a pretty proud dad, I'll tell you that. You know, a little teary-eyed because, you know, this is my son following me. And my daughter did not want to go. She's just not interested at all.
Right.
A little rattled by that. But, yeah, so he's into it. He also wants to play soccer as well, though. So he's into sports.
Cool.
But took him out, so I took the camera, of course.
And, yeah.
Because most of the kids are, because my son's three, right?
Yeah.
And so he's definitely the youngest there. I think most of them are, I think the next youngest one is five or maybe six. But, you know, I'm kind of the boss over there, so I can just take him if I want to.
Right, gotcha.
And, but I wouldn't, if it didn't work out, like if he just couldn't handle it, I wouldn't keep bringing him back. But he did fine. Or so they said. So the coaches said, yeah, bring him back. Can't wait to see you. But, yeah, had a great time. So I posted a picture of him hitting the ball.
Nice. I saw it somewhere. Maybe you emailed it or something.
Probably. Yeah. That was when I got home and I was in a teary mess about, so proud of my boy. I think I fired off an email pretty quick.
Nice.
But yeah, so there you go. That is what's going on / did you shoot anything interesting? So
that, in a nutshell, you summed it up.
Yeah, didn't really shoot anything interesting, but that's what's going on.
Okay.
So outside of Seattle, have you shot anything? It sounds like no.
No. I mean, we went to Grand Mound, Washington, the Great Wolf Lodge, so that's outside of Seattle, and that was part of our trip. So
okay.
That was the water park / all sorts of other things inside. Kids Bonanza Hotel that we went to for one night, and then we came back to Seattle. It's past Seattle, mm-hmm. relative to Vancouver, and then we came back to Seattle. So it's got stuff in the water park and that. So that was
you're,
also
you're okay
fun.
To shoot in the water park? They don't give you the...
Yeah, nobody says anything. And not there anyways, because it's a kid frenzy where parents have their phones out and cameras and everything. So nobody says anything about anything there. So that's, yeah, as far as I saw. I mean, I obviously was, you know, taking pictures of my kids. I wasn't doing close-ups of strangers. So
yeah.
I think if you did that, maybe someone would say something. But otherwise, I think everyone's just kind of taking little video clips of their kids. There's all kinds of neat stuff in there. So Sarah and Jack, like, there's like these big giant lily pads, and then there's sort of a rope structure over top, and you climb across, and the lily pads are all unsteady. And so you try not to fall in the water, and you're sort of using the sort of netting on the top to kind of pull and drag yourself across. And so they love doing that. And so I did a couple shots of that. But again, surprisingly, in an indoor pool, it's pretty dark in there too. And mm-hmm. they're moving pretty quickly. So again, I'm maxing out the need for a wide lens. And it was at the 1600 ISO for quite a bit of it. So, and still, again, good images coming off that camera. So Yeah, I'll try to post an array of different things. I'll probably use the Instagram for that and try to just pick a bunch of assorted photos, maybe 15 or 20 photos from our trip, and I'll post those.
All right. That leads us right into the photo challenge, which this week was fun, right?
Yeah, fun.
That was your call. Well, the good news is there was no fun at my house.
Oh.
Everybody, my daughter dodged it, but the rest of us got really, really sick this week. So I was just thinking, oh, man, how am I going to get a picture of fun? Everybody is just so sick and the opposite, the exact opposite of fun while you're gallivanting around Seattle.
Yeah, that's what I do. I gallivant.
And as you should. I would if were I you, you know. But let's have a look. I'll do mine first because yours is probably, I like yours better.
Okay.
So I took this today, literally, an hour, 2 hours before the show.
Okay.
Because there was no fun. But my wife said, "Well, get the kids. We have a little mini trampoline that the kids have."
Yeah.
Remember the one that cut my son's face open last year?
I don't remember, but sounds about right.
Yeah, no, 2 years ago maybe. But anyways, so we have that out there, and she said, "Well, take a picture of Emily jumping up and down on that." Okay, so that's what we did. Went outside, and did that, but I decided to light it though.
Okay,
because this is like right in the daytime, and just top right, top camera right, the sun is right there, just pounding down.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, okay, well, great. I'm going to have to light this. Took the 50 mil on the 5D Mark II.
Yeah.
And set up two SB28s, kind of one camera right, one camera left, to just blast right on her. And put a half CTO on each of them just to warm it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then blast that on her, and which, you know, in order to get, you know, it's not high-speed sync, so to get an image at ISO 100, shutter speed of 1/200th, you're looking at an f/16. Otherwise, that sky just blows out, right?
Yeah.
So got that dialed in, and then you got to basically pump it on each flash on full power just to light her up, because she's right. Really, really just to pierce that f/16. And so this was the shot. Now, in this one, before we get into your critique of it, the left hand, the camera left flash did not fire.
Okay.
So you can see the shadow on her face. It should have been filled in.
Gotcha.
It's not. So it's just kind of, I was a little bit sour about that. However, they were on the way out the door. And so I literally had 30 seconds before my wife freaked out and said, "No, we got to go." They're going to a friend's house for coffee. So it's not like there's, you know, the door's not closing. They could have got in 3 minutes later.
Right. So you're blaming your wife on this.
Oh, no, 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 no. Well, mostly her fault. Yeah, okay. Mostly. But anyways.
I like the photo. I like the configuration, the knees and the hands. I knew immediately what she was doing with the movement. And I said, oh, well, it's got to be a trampoline. Didn't know you had a mini trampoline, or maybe I forgot you had one. But so thought, oh, trampoline, cool shot. Just a little bit washed out from just obviously the way the sun's coming in so bright and hitting the camera lens is, you know, washes out the colors a little bit. But otherwise, yeah, it's a good shot. So I don't think you have, and I'm fine with the one flash not going. I still think it looks good. So
I'm going to try it again in a little bit better time of the day and with both flashes. And then, and so if I were to shoot this, like, say later in the evening around 5 with that lower sun, not only will it be better, but the exposure will be less. In order to expose the sky properly, which means less flash.
Right.
Because at full power, it takes so long to recycle.
Yeah. And also, it also you get the more of the motion blur as well on this.
True. That's true. And so, where you can see that, like, around, especially her right arm, and then both of her legs.
Her feet. Yeah.
Yeah. So, other than that, this is it's a start. I'm going to try this again. You know, maybe the good thing with the mini tramp is I can probably take it. It's portable. I can take it somewhere else without those trees in the background, and maybe get something like, just like the blue sky and experiment with that.
Cool.
But definitely she had fun because I told her to have fun. Have fun, darn it.
Starting now, fun.
Daddy, why do you need so many pictures of this? It's for my show, sweetie. Sorry, for our show.
Yeah.
And yeah, she didn't seem to care. So, all right, let's have a look at your picture. I like yours much better. Your daughter's having much more fun, legit fun.
She's having lots of fun.
Is there a Stardust roller rink in Seattle?
This is in Linwood, so this is 20 minutes sort of west of Seattle, I guess. I'm not good with directions, but yeah, let's call it 20 minutes west of Seattle in Linwood. And yeah, there's an old sort of bowling alley / roller rink that we just happened to see. We were staying in Linwood and driving into Seattle. The hotel we got was near this huge mall in Linwood that again has all the different amenities, and there was a root beer store that we really wanted to go check out, and it's basically a store of all like four, I think they said over 400 different types of root beer, and they had.
I saw that on your or maybe it's your wife's Instagram or something.
Yeah, she probably posted something.
How
about
do you
us.
Go to the bank and say, I'd like to borrow money for a root beer store?
Yeah, it's true. But you know what? It was a busy place and all kinds of tourists were coming in, mixed with all kinds of locals that like were the regulars. And it was a super neat place. And again, you get root beers from all over the world. And, you know, the kids each picked a different root beer. And, you know, they all come in the real glass bottles, like an actual bottle of beer. And the guy that ran the place knew everything about everything. I mean, he tried every single root beer in the store, and he was super, super knowledgeable about all things root beer, which was kind of a neat experience. And then as we're in the root beer store, you know, picking a root beer, right across the street is this huge, you know, roller rink / bowling alley out of the 80s. Like, they haven't updated it at all. It is truly exactly the same as it would have been 25 years ago. And they have, like, you know, the coin operated pool tables, and they have old video games, and they had a couple of more updated things, but they had, you know, air hockey and video games, and everything was still cheap. Like, a game of pool was, you know, 75 cents to play the coin operated pool. The Miss Pac-Man game was still 25 cents. And so
oh, wow.
it was super cool. And again, very nostalgic feeling. And it was, I think at the time it was 7:30, and we were just popping out we had promised the kids we'll check out this root beer store, and then we were just planning to go back to the hotel. So it was like, I want to say it was maybe 7:25 when we came out of the root beer store, and we were going to go back to the hotel and just kind of chill and have a swim and whatnot and kids go to bed. But we saw this place, and then we said, okay, well, let's go in and see. The roller rink opened at 7:30. So it was kind of meant to be, and that my daughter was like, oh, can we go? Can we do roller skating? And we'd done it in Portland a few years ago, and she had very fond memories. So Lisa and Sarah opted to do the roller skating, and Jack and I opted to play the pool tables. So they probably spent a good hour and a half at least, and there was a lineup around the block. Like, this is the local hangout for all the teenagers. Like, legitimately, it seemed like the entire town was there for the roller skating that started at 7:30. This was a Saturday night, I think, or Friday night, Friday or Saturday. But it was awesome just to see how many people are out there and doing this. And it was dark in there, as you can see in the background. And so I basically moved her to the rail because there was kind of a general getting ready seating and sort of area with tables and stuff. So there was some lights there. And so I brought her close to the rail. And then in that way, I knew I could get enough light to get an image.
Like, there's some light coming out of the getting ready area, you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what's lighting her up near the rail. And I'm shooting this. I'm trying to look. Do you have the metadata there? Oh, I see it now. It's it was an F2 at 1/80th of a second and an ISO of 1600. So again, pushing the absolute limits of the camera. And the nice thing about it, like shooting with the roller rink that you know what's going on in the background, is they're all in motion. So you get just kind of a nice blur of things in the background mixed with, I still at 1/80th of a second can get a sharp image on her and enough light on her. So really happy. This is straight out of camera, minus a tiny bit of noise correction and, again, a little bit of color correction because the lighting was so weird. Mm-hmm. And, I was thrilled to get this. I thought there was no chance without flash that I could get an image anywhere close to this when I'm standing there. And what it looked like on the back of the LCD was just not great. So,
like, your camera just reached up and punched you in the neck.
Yeah, it said, what are you thinking, right?
Why bother? Put the lens cap back on.
Exactly. So yeah. There you go. That's the beauty of the 5D Classic, is it's often much better than the LCD kind of indicates.
No, this is a great shot. It looks like you lit it. Like if you told me, oh yeah, I brought my LED, you know, video light, I'd say yeah. I probably wouldn't say that because you might have lit her a little bit brighter, but this looks like a well lit photo, and all the different colors, like the mass, like the blues, purples, greens that I'm seeing, anyways,
yeah,
go together great. Like it really fits in exactly what this shot should be.
And the funny thing is, like when the roll, because we were there right for opening, so I took almost the exact same shot before they turned all the lights off,
mm-hmm.
and it's fine, but this one with the color differential is way better because it just looks like then sort of an orangey gymnasium. I mean, I'll send you that picture as well just so that you can sort of show the difference in terms of, I mean, they're almost the exact same pose in the almost the exact same spot. And it, all the difference was they turned off and made for the blue lighting. Uh-huh. And anyways, this one is a far better photo than the other one just because of what they did with the light. I'm going to put that in there right now so you can see. This is the beauty of live on the go podcasting here. So that should show up any second for you. But yeah, no, it was one of those things that, again, super happy that I could actually get a good image, considering the conditions and the minimal gear that I brought. Right. So just not even close, right?
No. I stepped in some of that the other day, wipe it off my shoe, not your daughter, the lighting in the background. Like that is awful.
It's terrible. Right. And so I took
if you'd have brought this as your fun challenge photo, you'd have been fired from the pole. I don't care about six plus years seniority. You'd have been kicked off.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have made it black and white or something. But
I would have done something because it is pretty bad. But at the same time, I'm still okay with that photo for going in a book because that sort of shows like this is the old beaten up, you know, mm-hmm. sort of 1985 constructed gym, and everybody there is just out there having a good time. So
yes,
yeah, it does show what it was. But yeah, the other photo's far better. Agreed.
Way better. All right. Topic this week, we're going to our monthly photo challenge is shallow depth of field, which this photo actually would fit in nicely.
Sure.
But
I almost twisted them around.
No, there you go.
But yeah, I didn't.
You could go either way with these, actually.
Yeah.
But so in that vein, I wanted to find out a little bit more about the concept of bokeh. And you know how it's confused with depth of field and how why don't we hear from Don?
Sure,
because Don explains.
Let him confuse. Yeah, I said let him confuse us.
So I interviewed Don Komoreczka, who's been on the show many times. You know him. He's man, his resume is just getting thick now. All kinds of stuff. He's shooting for National Geographic, like video stuff, some macro stuff. He's the snowflake guy, and not the pejorative like we're hearing nowadays politically. He's the guy who shoots snowflakes.
Team photographer for the Barry Colts.
Former former team photographer. There was the details were hazy. But yeah, so he's been on all kinds of stuff. You might have seen him featured on The Nature of Things with David Suzuki. Check him out at doncom.ca. We'll put a link on our site. But without further ado, here's my interview with Don, all about bokeh.
So what are we talking about today?
Bokeh. You said bokeh.
Bokeh. Bokeh. Now, is it bokeh or bokeh?
Well, that'll be up to you. We've already started, so.
Oh, okay.
So you tell me, what is it? Is it bokeh or bokeh? What is it?
I think both pronunciations are acceptable. However, if we're basing it on the traditional Japanese, it would be more of bokeh.
Bokeh.
Yes.
I'm still saying bokeh.
Okay,
like
that's
Boca
fine.
Raton, Florida.
We can live with that.
So for those of you joining us late, as everybody is, because we kind of didn't do an intro, this is Don Komoreczka. Welcome back to the show, Don.
Thank you, Alan. I'm glad to be here.
And how is life as a dad? We have to start with the chit-chat.
Yeah, she's 9 months now, and so she is quickly becoming her own little person.
Yes.
And it's funny because she loves to walk around. I mean, she's not walking on her own yet, but we're kind of holding her up, and she's doing all the leg motions. And whenever she's upset, that's the one go-to thing to satisfy her anger. And for the first time was it 3-4 days ago, we had to put her in the car seat and go for a drive to get her to go to sleep. So we avoided it up until now. And it worked, but I don't want to have to do that every night. So
we have friends who that was their only move. I mean, they tried everything else, to their credit. It wasn't like that was their, you know, knee-jerk reaction, but we said we did not want to be those parents. And so I hear you. I feel your pain, man.
Yeah. So, but she's lovely. She's amazing, and we're very lucky to have her. The funny thing is, you know, as she continues to grow, we were going through a bunch of the old clothes, you know, from when she was a newborn, and kind of packing them away in boxes or what have you. And you know, my wife held up the outfit that she came home in, uh-huh. and I'm like, yeah, there's no way that she was ever that small, was she really? And she was swimming in that thing. I remember it was way too big for her. So, yeah, they grow quickly.
They do. Again, here comes the more parental advice. This is just something that I've kind of prescribed to, and is I try not to get hung up on the things that disappear. You know what I mean? Like things that go away. Like just as she gets older, there's certain things that you're not going to do anymore. There'll come a day when she no longer naps on your chest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's okay. For everything that you give up, you get to two or three great thing, new things.
Well, let's say new things. Some will be great, and some will be otherwise.
Oh, some will be terrible, and yeah. There was some. Yeah, doesn't matter. Both my kids, but it was not a good week in terms of cleanup. But yeah, but don't like. This is, it's kind of funny because I see, you know, you're on the Facebook, right?
The one of those book face things. That's right.
And you see, I have you ever done the you know when it comes up with the hey 2 years ago on this date kind of thing or remember?
And they put up a little video that's kind of a slideshow of animating all of the photos from that that particular time.
Well, that,
or your year in review or whatever it happens to be.
Right. There's the year in the review. I've never actually shared that. I don't think I have. Anyways,
I watched it. It was a bit creepy, actually. Like somebody else has been watching my entire life.
Yeah. But the one, every once in a while, they'll come up and, you know, they'll say, hey, 4 years ago on this date, and then they ask if you want to publish it. And I never do, ever. Like, I just, forget it. I'm not doing it. And a lot of people do it. And before you think I'm judging them, I am. But don't go down this rabbit hole. Of oh man, like the kids were so little then. Like it's just I don't see the upside.
I think everybody has to have the revelation at some point, and it's what you do with that. You know, do you plan on being nostalgic, or are you looking forward to what adventures tomorrow brings?
But well, this is now we're down the rabbit hole because you take pictures. You never take pictures of the present ever.
No, you're right. Well, you're always taking pictures of a moment past, but mm-hmm. you can plan to move on to whatever the next adventure is going to be. Like I've got photographic ideas that I'm not going to be able to explore for a few years, but they're kind of sitting there and I'm planning and I'm building that up. And that's part of the photographic process for me as well.
But you take pictures of your kids for yourself, just the one. I'm not, you know, spoiler alert. Maybe you're having more. I don't know. But you take pictures of your daughter for you, right?
Oh, yeah. Most of those photos are, you know, just cell phone snaps because it's in the moment. It's that mm-hmm. opportunistic. It's like, oh, that's really cute. Grab the phone and take that photograph. And, yeah, we share them amongst family, but we're not going to be posting the entire stream of them onto Facebook.
No. But inherently, like every picture you take, it is for nostalgic purposes. So in that case, I mean, everybody does it, and there's no other way to do it. That's the only way. It's only for nostalgia, right or wrong. But we're not talking about nostalgia.
We're talking about bokeh.
But you scratch the surface of something that I'm wildly fascinated with, and we've talked about it on the show before, Adam and I, and he was not as fascinated with nostalgia as I am.
Well, this is why we collect things, right?
Yes, I think. I mean, yes.
It's deeply ingrained in our psyche to collect things that we remember. You know, to and that could be in this conversation, that could be photographs. And you know, people collect video games because they like to play games of past generations that they might have remembered when they were a child, and they want to relive some of that that excitement. That I think is it's just part of human being, human nature, and I think it should be embraced so long as it doesn't cripple what you're trying to accomplish moving forward.
I'm not anti-nostalgia at all. I'm very much pro.
Yeah,
but exactly what you said. If as long as you don't just live in the past, you know, yeah, okay, we're good. We've got that set.
All right. Okay. We got that off our chest.
So we've been talking, Adam and I talked last week about, we went into greater depth on the depth of field, on what depth of field is, how to achieve it, what do you want to do with it? Because we touched on that like years ago, very early on, because that's the first thing that you, when you become a real photographer, and you make that jump up and you get your first DSLR or whatever it is, that's what you want to go with, shallow depth of field, right?
Right. And that's got that air of quality to it, right? You know an expensive camera's made that shot because it has that shallow depth of field.
Yeah, your mom can't do that with her iPhone. So now you're separating yourselves. Now, that's what we talked about last week. But and our ongoing monthly challenge is shallow depth of field. But there's another aspect to just specifically shallow depth of field. So I kind of thought about it, and I thought there's three camps on the bokeh. That's the game you play with the that's bocce. I'm thinking of bocce. Different game. Petanque, maybe in France. So in terms of bokeh, as I'm just going to force myself to say it, I think there's three camps in the photography world. There's the people who think bokeh is the out of focus background.
Right.
There are people who know the difference between bokeh and out of focus and the shallow depth of field. And there's people who have never, ever heard of it.
And they don't care.
Not yet. Not till they hear this.
There we go. We are going to enlighten some people.
So what is bokeh?
Well, when you're thinking about an out-of-focus background, if you have just a flat object that becomes out of focus, it basically becomes blurry, right? That's the nature of how it can be. And that can be somewhat easy to emulate in post-processing. You can apply a blur to a photograph and make it look like it's out of focus. But the reason why that's not accurate to what happens when something is out of focus is it kind of all centers around the concept of specular highlights and what happens when a sharp point of light gets forced out of focus and how that interacts with the lens and the scene. And magic can happen in a scenario, and you can try to frame images very specifically to have these really bright light points in the background specifically for what happens to them when they become out of focus, because they don't just become blurry like a vase of flowers on a table with no highlights or everything being matte around it and nothing shiny and glossy as a result. If you have, say, like a glare off of a window, if you have Christmas lights that have very specific tiny little colored light sources that would then be forced out of focus, something changes in that out of focus background, more so than it just becoming blurry. And this is, you know, where the conversation of bokeh is all centered around.
So what is the difference between bokeh and shallow depth of field? Like what are we looking for?
So what happens, I guess the difference is kind of centered around what the effect is. And let's describe that visually in the photograph. If you have an out of focus light, it will become blurry in the sense that it becomes larger than itself, but it will often always have very specific hard edges around it still maintained. So if you were to just artificially blur something, you don't have that effect. oftentimes the bokeh will take on the shape of the aperture of the lens. So if you're shooting with a lens that has a six blade aperture, the bokeh in the background will become hexagonal in shape because it's going to take on the shape of whatever that aperture happens to be. So imagine all of those out of focus light points in the background now becoming little hexagons and stuff around in that background area. If you're shooting with a lens that might have a six blade aperture, but you're shooting with it wide open, then your aperture is now effectively circular again, and the out-of-focus light points in the background will become circular in nature as well. And certain lenses will have a very beautiful quality in their bokeh, and they're specifically sought after for this purpose. And I've got a number of these lenses as well. One that I'm a huge fan of is actually an optical formula that was developed in the early 1900s, I think 1916 or something, a variant on the original kind of lens triplet design called the Trioplan. And the Trioplan is currently, they make modern versions of that, and I've got one. But you can pick up an old one on eBay for, you know, $200 or $300 and mount that to a modern camera with a cheap little adapter. And with that, you get what's called soap bubble bokeh, where the out-of-focus areas in the background, they'll be circular in shape, but the outer edge of them becomes much brighter than the inner area of them. And it's a really magical effect when the light decides to behave in this particular way. So the quality and the type of bokeh can really define an image. In the case of portraiture, you know, bokeh can make the background more interesting or more atmospheric to the overall image. When I'm dealing with macro photography, the background is one of the most important elements in a frame because it adds color and environment and can, you know, introduce extra lines and shapes that are valuable to the composition. And that can all be done by just putting out of focus light points in the background.
So my good friend Gertrude Stein once said bokeh is bokeh is bokeh. She's wrong.
There's all sorts of different types of bokeh. And you know, for example, you know, we were talking about a lens having, you know, six aperture blades, hexagonal shape.
So what does that mean? Let's back up on that. So let's say I'm buying the Nifty 50, the Thrifty 50, whatever we're calling that, the 50 yep. millimeter f1.8 for the Canon, which is, I don't know if anyone buys it anymore because you can get the Yongnuo one for free, I think.
Yeah, just about.
And it's good. It's a good lens. But that one, I believe, has five aperture blades.
And so you get a pentagonal bokeh, which I don't think is as pleasing.
Because?
Well, I mean, I'm all for symmetry, and five is not a symmetrical kind of shape, and it doesn't really have the same natural feel to it. The same thing happens with my 15 millimeter fisheye lens. Any bokeh that I'm trying to create with that will have five points on it as well. It just feels a little bit weird. So certain shapes work better than others. The more sides to the bokeh it has, the more pleasing I think it is. So 7, 8, 9 aperture blades will create, you know, a nonagonal. Is that the word for nine? I think it's so. Anyhow, a nine-sided shape, and then you can create something a little bit more pleasing as a result. But here's a fun trick, and very few photographers have done or have gone past an experimental, oh, that's a neat trick kind of stage with it, but it does have some merit, and I'm exploring it right now. Whereas if you take, like, I'm actually doing an experiment with sheets of acetate, you know, the material for overhead projectors and what have you, and I've got some of those that I can run through an inkjet printer, and I'm going to print apertures on that, meaning that I'll print sort of like a black square, and then the image will be white, or in this case, it's transparent, where I want an aperture to show up. And the aperture can be any shape you can imagine. It can be a heart. It could be a cross. It could be a symbol, a logo. It could be just about anything you could imagine, you know, a shape, a star. And if you put that in front of your lens, then now all of your out-of-focus areas in the background that have those specular highlights coming back in, they will take on the shape of that.
Right.
So I've got another lens that, you know, some art lenses from Lomography will have these little drop-in aperture plates. And they come with a bunch of circular ones, but they also come with a bunch of experimental ones. This is the daguerreotype Achromat that I have. But I think there's a number of lenses from them that offer these same aperture plate drop-ins. And it's just a really convenient way to have that feature. And it's purely experimental. The results can be sometimes a little bit, yeah, that's kind of... it doesn't really suit me, or it's mm-hmm. just it's becoming the image, and the image is getting lost in the effect. But in certain creative instances, you can really use that to a fun advantage. And I've gotten a number of images that worked really well. I did a freezing soap bubble earlier this winter, and I shot it with a snowflake-shaped aperture so that the autofocus areas in the background had little snowflakes in them. And I thought that was kind of neat. It worked.
Yeah, this is something we've done on a much more rudimentary level a couple of years ago, actually, just with you know, cardboard and an X-Acto knife, and we cut
or black construction paper.
That's very what it was. Easy to
do. Yeah,
yeah, we did that, and again, yours sounds a lot better. You know, you can do a lot more fine looking details than you can with the X-Acto knife. You're getting a star. That's what you're getting. A star or a heart, essentially, is what we're doing. I think it's what Adam and I did.
But if you're using a sheet of acetate for this experiment, then what you could do is it doesn't have to be just a complete outer shape. It could have details on the inside that are also blocked. So if I were to print one of my snowflakes as an aperture, I could have details inside of the shape and not just the outer footprint of it using this technique.
Mm-hmm.
Will it make a difference? I have no idea. I haven't tried yet.
We'll find out.
I will find out soon.
But in terms of basic bokeh, or I think everyone, what's the, when the bokeh is just the best, like it's just really great, what do they call it? Is it creamy?
Well, it depends.
I've heard that.
And there's different types of swirly, depending on the kind of lens. You could have a sort of a swirly bokeh where the out of focus areas in the background look like they are kind of swirling around the subject. It's very common in old portrait lenses to create this effect. But I guess we should kind of start into the discussion. How do you make this? Like, what subjects can you place behind in your frame in order to get this beautiful out of focus? Because if you're walking through, you know, just on a hiking trail and you take a picture and you throw it out of focus, you might have no noticeable highlights that, you know, take on these shapes. So then what creates these shapes? What do you seek out in your scene?
Right. But just in terms of just your basic out of focus background, like we're not talking about like having Christmas lights or something, which we will in a second, but just, you know, you have the forest kind of disappear behind you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you have leaves or whatever it is. Without having those little pinpoint of lights that show up, you can still see the effect. You can still see the difference between a 5-bladed aperture and a 9-bladed aperture.
If you look very closely, sure. It's going to be less obvious, though.
But that's the thing. So everyone, I think from what I hear is the go-to lens in the Canon world for the best bokeh in the history of all time. Everyone says it's the 85 f1.2.
And I've used that lens. Actually, I borrowed it for my stepsister's wedding and shot with it extensively the whole day. Everybody loved the images that I made with that lens because the background just felt so soft, creamy, or whatever the word is that you want to use. And so, you've got that certain softness that some lenses will create better than others. But I don't think that that's going to be the critical point of an image. If it comes down to analyzing the bokeh in the photograph, it means it's a successful photograph to begin with.
But listen, if the people who like those images, how many of the non-photography people that are in your life did say, oh man, I really love how the out-of-focus parts are smooth?
Well, the thing is, I could have gotten a very similar shot from the 85 f1.8. Right. And in fact, it would autofocus faster and better in many ways and would be a more useful tool. So if I were to put a photograph in front of them, say, OK, well, I shot this one on one lens and this one on the other lens. And which one do you like better? I'm not certain that a majority of the people would choose the 1.2 versus the 1.8 based on a number of different factors. But to a lot of people that are not in the photography space, I think that if it's great, it's good enough. It doesn't have to be the very best lens that a manufacturer offers, or it might have to have a particular niche, like I'd mentioned the soap bubble bokeh of the Trioplan lenses.
Mm-hmm. I find that with the bokeh, I mean, I don't own the F1.2. I probably never will. I'm very, very happy with the 85mm f1.8 that I have. use it all the time. And thus I have no issue with the bokeh. You know, it's not really on my radar. I do notice a difference between, like, say, the Canon 50mm f1.8 and, you know, much more expensive lenses. There is a difference in just your general out-of-focus background.
Absolutely. And there's no question that a more expensive lens typically will have more attention played into that background. I recently picked up a macro lens, the Miticon 20mm. It's a super extreme macro lens, 4 to 4.5 times magnification. I don't know why. They cut corners in the dumbest area here. Their aperture is a three-blade aperture. I've never seen a three-blade. Yeah, exactly. I've never seen a three-blade aperture before. It creates trigonal bokeh in the background that, I mean, it's fun as like a one-trick pony, but it gets tired really fast. And you know what? I know it's inexpensive to add a couple more blades in there, and I'm just really curious as to why they didn't, because to me, it hurts recommending that lens. It's the only thing that I don't like about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, more expensive lenses will, again, get you that better quality to that out-of-focus background area.
So I think when the like, your general, just average Joe is going to have a look at your picture, they're not going to notice the bokeh, the quality of the bokeh, unless it's bad. And even then, even then, they're not going to point it out. It's still going to be, oh, yeah, but there will be some sort of a, I kind of like this one better, and I don't know why.
This is true. And it would be a subliminal thing to most people. They won't be able to put their finger on it and identify exactly what makes one image better than the other, because it is a subtle difference in the background when it's just having the smoothness and the softness, and we're not talking about the specular highlights that are really standout elements in bokeh when used properly.
So how do we introduce those standout elements?
Okay. Well, there's a number of ways to do it. Again, you need to create sort of glistening elements within the frame. You know, we talked before about Christmas tree or Christmas lights in the background. Having those out of focus will create bokeh. But I mean, that's a complete environmental change. It's not like you've got an existing scene and you want to add something to it. You can't just, I guess you could pack a bunch of Christmas lights into your trunk and carry them around with you everywhere. Good luck with that. But other ideas for this include, if you're doing portraiture and you want to have some of that happening in the background, you could have like a nice, an out-of-focus forest backdrop or something. And you could poke little holes in that and shine a light coming in from behind, a dark cloth with a bunch of holes in it with a flash behind it, just as its own thing, will be pure bokeh, only bokeh, and it will give you that kind of effect. And if you can integrate that into a scene, then you'll have that effect kind of coming in at the same time. Another fun trick is not just dealing with background bokeh, but foreground bokeh as well. And so one of the things that that you can do is take like a piece of glass, spray some water on it, and then when you're taking the image, put that in front of the subject, and now you'll have some bokeh shapes in the foreground that can add some atmosphere to the frame as well. You might have to light them depending on the scenario that you're in. That could, you know, add some extra drama or depth into an otherwise simple image.
On a rainy day, shoot through the rain-covered window.
Exactly, and you'll get that effect happening. But the interesting thing is I've been experimenting with this quite heavily on a macro scale, and I've actually been using minerals as a source for bokeh in the background. I've got a clump of quartz and chalcopyrite, and a few other interesting minerals that have very small crystals that have a multitude of different facets all over them. So when I shine a flash onto that, or even a flashlight, certain little tiny specks of brightness come back to the camera and take on the color of whatever that mineral is. Mm-hmm. And so I can create some really interesting out-of-focus effects that will take on the colors of whatever that crystal happens to be, just as a backdrop for the image that I'm constructing in the foreground. And it makes a wonderful background just by using a, you know, piece of mineral.
My mind's blown. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I'll let you put the pieces back together.
Hang on a second. So foreground bokeh, man. No, that sounds like that's far beyond anything that I'm going to do. But I look forward. Like, do you have those images online somewhere that we can see?
Yeah. I mean, I can give you some to put in the show notes, or you can just check out my Flickr account, and you'll find them all there. Anywhere on social media, I've been posting these in the last little while, and they've been really fun.
Good. Boca is a lot more complicated than I think we give it credit for, in terms of what's going on. Have you ever – I don't know that they still do it now in the age of digital cinematography. I don't think it comes up as much. But back in the day when you're shooting 35mm film – the big deal was to have a super wide, like a cinema, what was it called? The CinemaScope image. You want this really wide, like 235:1 aspect ratio, just fill that whole screen, right?
Right.
Well, oftentimes what they would do is they would shoot it with something called an anamorphic lens, which would basically squish the image horizontally, and then when they project that image in the theater, they would have an anamorphic lens on the projector and unsquish it.
Now, right.
You can see these. You can see, and so it becomes this really wide. So basically, you're squeezing much more image onto this tiny little frame. Now, and everything, you know, it looks great. Looks amazing. But if you really pay attention to the bokeh, it maintains that anamorphic sort of squished look to it.
That's right. So you can identify what that was originally shot on based on the shape that the bokeh is appearing in the frame, because that's not going to be correctable in the same sort of way.
So did I just ruin Lawrence of Arabia for you?
Jerk.
Although that might have been shot on 70mm anyways. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I picked the right one. Maybe some John Ford movies, but...
Well, the interesting thing, too, is we can talk just tying into bokeh, and you mentioned cinematography. Bokeh is a hard thing to do in post, and so it's always good to have the best kind of equipment as far as in the field, the cameras, the lenses, to generate the best kind of bokeh. And sometimes flare is an interesting creative element that you can add into a lens or into an image or a composition. I've got a lens that basically the manufacturer took apart an old, I think it was a Helios 44 or like an old Soviet era lens, ground all of the coatings off of the lens and put it back together. Because those coatings that are on every glass element in a lens are designed to remove things like glare and flare and ghosting and what have you. Mm-hmm. And remove that. And now you've got a lens that just creates crazy flare all over the place. So whenever you shoot into the sun or another bright light point, then you'll get this flare coming across the image. And flare will also take on the shape of the camera's aperture. And it can be used very, very creatively. In infrared photography, all of the coatings that are on a lens, I'll put on my propeller hat for just about 30 seconds here. Those coatings are based on the fundamentals of thin film interference, and that's based on the wavelengths of light. So they're specifically tuned for the visible spectrum of light. When you step beyond that into ultraviolet or infrared, it's like those coatings are also not there. So anybody that has had some experience shooting in infrared photography will notice that they're subject to a lot more flare than they're normally used to. Shooting wide open will make that flare take on the same soft, interesting effect of bokeh. If you bring the aperture smaller and smaller, the flare gets more concise and crisp and geometric as a result. And sometimes that can be less pleasing too. So flare and bokeh kind of run hand in hand.
Wow, that's a lot to unpack.
Yep.
Don, thanks for coming on and telling us, explaining that. Well, one question I didn't get to. Why did the Japanese invent it? Why didn't we do it?
Well, the Japanese had a word that you know was sort of synonymous with bokeh, and it was it meant like a blurry background or blurry quality or hazy in that particular sense, and so for them it was just a word that was in their vocabulary that you know I'm sure that they have a larger vocabulary than we have in English, and English is for the most part we pull in words from other languages that suit our needs if we don't have them, and I guess that was this particular case.
I was trying to stump you, man. Can't do it. Can't stump Don.
I just read the Wikipedia article on it before we started talking.
That you probably wrote.
No comment.
In all likelihood, yeah. So, Don, where can people go to find all about you?
Well, you can find me at donkom.ca, donkom.ca. And you could also tune in and listen to my podcast, which launched recently, called Inside the Lens, where we talk about all sorts of this geeky topics in photography. We recently did one on electron microscopy, one on full spectrum or extra spectrum photography, extreme macro photography. And there's tons of, if you're interested in the sort of the not gear-oriented techie side of photography, but into the science of it, you know, color science and all of that sort of stuff, give us a listen as well.
Check them out. Great. Once again, Don, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
And we're back. Cleared up now, Adam?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You could write a essay about bokeh. I don't know. I'm going, as I said in the interview, I'm just going with bokeh.
Sure.
If you don't like it.
Yeah. I'm good with bokeh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're fine with it.
Did Don disagree with you on the pronunciation?
He didn't disagree. I mean, he did disagree, but he was fully accepting of my ignorance.
Right. But he said bokeh.
Oh, he said some word that had the number 7 in it. I don't even know. Like, I couldn't pronounce it.
He explained to you the Latin, you know, origin of it?
Well, it's Japanese.
Okay.
That part I knew. Photo challenge. But definitely check his stuff out at donkom.ca and on the Twitter. He's very, very active on all angles of social media.
Okay.
And has his own podcast, which he also promoted in the interview as well.
Great.
Okay, photo challenge for next week. It is our monthly photo challenge, which is shallow depth of field.
Okay.
So you've already shot yours.
Yes. Unless I change it, but I don't think so.
No, I've tried and failed twice. I might post the failures because they're so epically bad.
Hashtag cutting room floor.
Oh no! They fell through that. They are basement, awful.
Basement. Oh, they're so bad that room.
You know how when you piece together the panorama,
yeah,
and then you gotta save it, right? I didn't even save it. I didn't even hit save because it was so bad. So I'll redo it, and then hit save and show you how bad it is.
Okay,
like it's like wow, you don't know what you're doing, but twice in a row.
Okay, all right, you learned something the first time.
No. I didn't.
Oh, that's too bad.
I messed it up 2 in a row. So, good time. So I'm going to reshoot that. I'll get something good. And I guess that's a spoiler alert that I'll probably be trying. Well, I guess I won't be doing the Brennheiser method for this one. That was my plan.
Okay.
That's it. All right. Websites. Adam, where can people go to find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca. I'm due for an update, so check that out. Maybe.
But
the weather's
getting nice, though. You can't do updates in the nice weather.
I'm going to, for sure, though, Instagram, especially if my face blows up like a balloon, I'm going to Instagram a picture of my post-wisdom face on Instagram.
You're seeing a lot of post-wisdom right now.
Is there?
In the news.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
Okay, you can find my stuff at alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all the links, photos, everything we just talked about. And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.